Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
I could just start
to... Hey there, Beverly Hills 90210 fans.
You know how when they yell cut, they wouldn't stop.
That's interesting.
What?
Yes.
If you were Donna, what would you have said?
I said...
A waitress rather call the police. And she was mistaken 90210 for cops.
Along with your host, Charles Rosen.
But look at that. Dean Cake, and Dan probably got the best performance he ever gave.
We're having a meeting here.
Oh, at least there's one person on this Fricotta set that knows what they're doing.
Larry Mullen.
I had a friend named Craig Richland. There was still cocaine around and stuff. I always remembered him. I just kind of thought I would honor my coke dealer.
Get out of here!
Pete Ferrero.
Here's what I learned. It's possible Claire would have gone out with me.
That was your takeaway.
So sit back and relax, because it's like totally time for the Beverly Hills 90210 show.
Just hold on to me tonight.
Okay, here we are back again on the Beverly Hills 90210 show. Larry, it's good to see you. It's rainy here by me. How is it by you?
Rainy. It's not stormy though at the beach. There's no wind. And it's good for us, as you know, for the drought of California. There's nothing wrong with it. It's not really devastating here. We don't really have any flooding at the beach, and our beach is broad, so we're very fortunate. Get too far, and I know Brian will echo this, we want to pump the tires on The Good Bad Boy by Margaret Wappler. Really interesting read for the Dylan fans. It's just a must-have.
Okay.
The author really did her homework. She's a journalist, and she also put a good personal story that wove through it, I thought. What'd you think, Brian?
Yeah, I don't have my copy on hand, but I agree. You know, I love what she did with it. I like that it's not, you know, your conventional biography, you know. You get, jumps around in places, but I like that. It really keeps your attention, and like you said, she really did her homework, and lots of great interviews in there with you, with Chuck, of course. Just a really fantastic read.
I thought she got to stuff, and I guess, you know, none of the cast though did interviews, which was interesting. I'm not sure why they didn't, because she was very credible a biography. I mean, as it turned out, it was not like sensationalized. It was not cheap in any way. You know, it's kind of an upscale bio, and we wish her the best with it.
Said she put a lot of quotes in from the podcast. Is that true?
Yes, she did. She was podcast watching. Hopefully she's watching now. No, we hear it.
I mean, yeah. I love her. I got to meet her too. I had lunch with her. You know, she's a really nice person. Is Rory Karp, my friend Rory Karp, in there? Our friend, his longtime friend.
I think so. Yeah. I mean,
okay. I haven't read it yet. So, Margaret, where's mine? Why I got a copy of this?
Also, I wish Chuck was here today, but he's busy today, and we miss him. But happy election day, everybody who voted and stuff, and it was interesting. And
a lot of very interesting things happening there, you know, with that. Larry, before we get into hi Brian, how are you? It's good to see you again. Did we say that?
No, you didn't, but you're seeing it now.
You are the orchestrator sort of our this week's topic, because we wanted to explore the craziest shit that people have said on Reddit, whether it's a theory, a good question. You know what people the hater raid that's going on.
I really watered it down, because there's some, if you know Reddit, it gets crazy, like probably things that we can't post on here. So I weeded through the best ones.
That you did a wonderful job curating that. I want to say that I was able to touch base with the person that has generated all of the things that we do on this podcast. You know, the person that writes the list of things like Larry did. I am
really
in touch
impressed.
With it. It's a person. It's a guy.
It's not AI.
And it really entertains me. There was a whole thing in one of them that Larry switched out his car battery.
I do. No, I leave my car. I leave my car on the East Coast idle for 6 months and take the negative cable off. And when I come back 6 months later, put the negative cable back on. And the car fires up.
This is amazing. That was covered in this in the review.
Okay. Anyway, it's just a little helpful hint.
Yeah. Larry, there's so much going on with Vince McMahon right now. I know this is a non sequitur to some people that follow this podcast, but people are sharing Vince stories all over the place because he is he's been removed from WWF or WWE.
Yeah.
And there's a whole scandal and texts and all this kind of stuff. You worked with Vince McMahon.
I was part of the 2005 WWE tour, specifically a SmackDown writer, though I worked sometimes on Raw. But we all traveled together in Vince's private plane and the limos. And I lived in Stamford, Connecticut, and kind of flew out usually Sunday night or Monday morning and came back Wednesday, which the flight home was the day off. And then we'd start again that Thursday for the next week's show. We're doing 4 hours of live television a week.
The lawsuit is horrific, the things that are being written.
Yes, it is. And, you know, a lot of it, you know, okay, I mean, I don't want to say one way or the other, but I mean, you know, in these kind of cases, though, it is kind of he say, she said, you know, I mean, not that Vince is not totally capable of that, because he was in a bulletproof world and still is. I don't know if anything will ever happen, but I was informed by my old boss there at just recently, like within the last couple of weeks, that I may get deposed by a private detective who represents the one of the divas who's suing Vince for something that happened when I was there. So that'll be interesting.
I don't want to get into all of this, but did you know the story? And
no, I mean, we had always heard. I mean, look, it was a rough shop. I mean, this is like Carney people, but they're billionaires. It's an interesting combination. It's kind of really, you know, these are not college graduates.
Billionaire and highly sophisticated worlds. Somebody once told me a story about Vince that whenever he stays at a hotel for WrestleMania, that he has to, that they clean out and have to put plastic on the beds and clean out all, redo like the bathtubs and showers and shit like this. Like he won't go in unless it's all totally new shit.
I believe it. It sounds very Vince.
I guess I don't have any cleanliness stories of Vince.
Well, but, you do have a story. I mean, one of the parts of this story is that and this is horrific. I can't believe I'm sharing this about him defecating on this poor girl. I mean,
you should mention that. I think it was Edmonton, Canada. We were in Edmonton, Canada. I had kind of run afoul of she who must not be named, who is running the company, really, his daughter, Stephanie, also a heel. See, Vince plays the heel. And I, you know, I'm up there now. I remember now, because it was a driving story. We had played Calgary, and now it was late, and I got bumped off the plane, and they wanted me to drive from Calgary to Edmonton. I'm going, no. So I made him get me a limo. So they got me a limo, and I drove through there, and I got to Edmonton, and when they gave out assignments, I didn't have one. I'm traveling like, you know, 3,000 miles, and I'm going to sit around. So I go to Stephanie, you know, because I'm pretty new in the company, maybe 4 months or whatever. You know, I got maybe 20 shows under my belt, maybe less. And I said, well, what am I supposed to do? She says, oh, just go in Gorilla and watch Vince. The Gorilla is this tented off area where the cameras are that Vince sits with the director, and he's got a headset, and he's talking to, you know, Michael Cole and Taz. He's talking to the referee. He's like the puppet master. He's controlling everything, which is part of his. I want to preface that because Vince is an absolute genius, a spontaneous,
totally
improvisational genius, and just a master showman. I mean, with all that, he's also, you know, kind of, you know, he's become a heel. He's become what he's portraying.
Right.
Anyway, so we're watching the thing. I'm sitting there trying to watch Vince in Gorilla, and Vince goes, "Huh, I thought I was farting, but I just shit in my pants. Yeah, smell it." And he systematically made each of us in the room, which is about seven people, smell his ass.
There you go.
That was my watching Vince in Gorilla.
So it's not out of the realm of possibility that this story that exists.
No, not at all. But you know, what goes behind client door, I'm not going to judge. I mean, you know, again, the someone, you know, this, look, I mean, you know, I'm sure the side, because again, the girl, you have to know what's going on. This is, like I said, it's a rough shop. You join up here, it's a rough shop.
It's not a normal.
It's a rough shop hazing wise too. I mean, I saw them, you know, the wrestlers really haze a lot of other young people too. I mean, I don't think I got hazed particularly. They had a lot of respect for me because I had done 90210.
Well, the Miz, was the Miz someone that you saw got hazed there? The Miz? Mike the Miz?
No, I wasn't there for that.
Stacy Keibler probably.
I was there with Stacy, and she's a giant 90210 fan. I spent an evening in Birmingham, England, just kind of going over the backstage stories of 90210 with her, which was fantastic. It was just a memorable
night. She seems like a really sweet person.
Great. She was terrific. So classy.
I mean, the person that did all of the hazing is JBL, and I'm really surprised.
JBL was a mean motherfucker. One of my assistants is a young kid on his first trip out. And they put charged a bunch of gay porn on his hotel bill, and he got called into corporate, had to explain himself, and got in a lot of trouble. That's what JBL did. That was called
infamous.
It was a rib.
That's what they call a rib whenever they.
All right, listen. I'm going to play an ad. We're going to come back. We're out of WWE. We're going to come back to 90210 and all the
nightmares have stopped. The nightmares have stopped.
Okay, here's an ad, and we'll be right back.
Hey, Beverly Hills 90210 fans. Check out all the latest rad stuff from the Beverly Hills 90210 Show Shop. They have everything you could possibly imagine. So, like, go there now, okay?
Okay, so now we are back here talking about the craziest Reddit.
Before we do, I just want to say a testimonial here. I ordered the Planet 90210 denim sweatshirt. It's fantastic. I love it. It's
great
material, great design.
I ordered another Claire shirt just because I don't have enough of those. So that's what I got. Anyway. Tammy mentioned a comment, our friend Tammy. Tammy, hello. It's good to see you. We haven't seen you in a while. Tammy was in Las Vegas with us, and she said that she received her copy of the Luke Perry book last night. Almost finished it. Fantastic read. So there is that. A lot of people talking about it. Okay, where do we want to start here?
I was going to say, do we want to do the theories first, or do we want to do hot takes?
Let's start with a theory.
Well, but again, there's two stops. There's the actors themselves and the characters they're portraying.
That's correct.
Right. I've got one of each.
All right, okay. Let's start. What's your actor theory?
My actor theory?
Yeah.
Okay, this is just, I'm going to clarify something because it really is amplified in the book. In the book, they talk about, I think it's a Christmas party, correct me if I'm wrong, Brian, where Tori is dating a gentleman who's named in the book as Nick Savalas, Telly Savalas' son. Yes. And he's being, I think, verbally abusive to Tori and Luke decks him. Is that correct?
Oh, it's in the book, yeah.
Okay. Well, I remember when the Shannon thing came down, Jessica Klein, bless her soul, I can't believe she's gone. It's just frightening.
Miss her so much, yeah.
And we all were looking for answers. And Jessica really was close to the actors. And she said, well, and she basically gave her theory, which probably was the truth now looking at the book. Aaron, who loved his daughter, no harm, no foul, and controlled the show, really felt that Nick Cavett, I should preface it, that Nick was introduced to Tori by Shannon's circle. She was in Shannon's circle, socializing with Shannon. The old man, being a father, perceived Shannon being a bad influence on Tori. Now, it's like a perfect storm. He felt that way. At the same time, Shannon was having her instances, which are well documented also in her podcast or whatever, on the set. And the cast was unhappy with her and to a man-woman. And so those perfect storm events converged, and Mr. Spelling, being the master manipulator and passive aggressive, allowed the cast, who probably he would have normally said, screw you, knowing how important she was. But he must have perceived two things. He must have perceived the show could survive without Shannon. And the second thing, he didn't want to look like it was his fault. And so basically he kind of allowed that to happen. He allowed the crew to take over for that moment and to educate that decision to part ways with Shannon, probably knowing in the back of his mind how powerful she was and that he could use her again. Because, like I said, he was a master. Again, Vince McMahon is the low end. Aaron was a classy showman, one of the last of the breed. But he really... the show was what was important. He would just exchange people back and forth. It was, he expected loyalty, but usually gave none.
What's funny you mentioned that, Larry. You know, that's a theory that I've heard murmurings about a lot over the years, especially on Reddit. And yeah, like you said, you know, seeing the story in the book, and you know, you really start to kind of put two and two together, and it really does seem like it's a possibility.
I think knowing how he operated, and knowing, and again, what Jessica told me, that he really thought that Tori, her life was being ruined by SD. That, you know, he got worried like any father would. That she introduced him to a guy who, now I heard that he physically abused her.
I've heard that as well.
I did as well.
That's what Jessica told me. Jessica, I don't mean to trample on her spirit, but that she told me that, and she would confess to that obviously herself. You know, there's a lot out on it, so I don't really feel like I'm hurting anybody that's not already. I'm just saying.
I feel like this is
I'm adding the pieces up and nailing it down for you. This is what, that was a complicated decision. It was a perfect storm of events that happened. You know, Shannon acting up, the cast being unhappy, and Aaron being unhappy, and it all kind of came in, and that was the easiest solution, and it was cleanest for the old man.
We did get a lot of questions about the Shannon thing. Did you happen to see any of the clips with her this week talking about her leaving and all of that stuff? Do you feel like she was targeted? You know, whereas her and Tori were also going out quite a bit, and you know, if everyone was going to get on Shannon about
being targeted by the press or by the internal forces.
The internal forces, yeah.
Well, again, we always felt the she knew her lines. I mean, from the writer's point of view, she was a darling because she never really complained about the lines. She sounded exactly like she sounded in your head when you wrote them. I mean, she was really a master, and she could party all night and come to the set and just do lines. She was a professional. She had been a professional her whole life, and that's was her skill set. And I think it drove them crazy a little bit that she could do that. She could burn the candle on both ends.
It's interesting. It's like Shannon is rock and roll. You know what I mean? She's a star, and she's a female, so she's rock and roll. She's, you know, she's Keith Richards of 90210 and to a degree. You know what I mean? She's going to come to set when she wants to. She's going to do what she wants to do because, let's face it, it was the Walsh show. And she is one major half of that show. She's definitely the reason we're all coming every week to see what's going on. And maybe there should have been a little bit more flexibility.
It was just a perfect storm, and it became an expedient way to solve a problem, which Mr. Spelling thought was happening.
And it's just fascinating.
He couldn't get out of it. He wasn't going to tell Tori, don't hang out with Shannon.
And we all don't know really what everybody was doing, but it's fascinating that if Jason or Luke or Ian or one of the guys were the rock and roll guy on the show and they were out all the time, would there have been such a rule in place for them to come all the cast all get together and say, we got to remove this person from the set, you know, because he's totally out of line. You know, I feel like Shannon.
Well, again, these are young people. Everyone was a little bit immature, so you got to forgive them.
Exactly.
Or whatever, you know, their insecurities or whatever. But look, she was the one the press was after. We can see it now in our podcast. If we say Brenda in one of these titles, we get instantly more people.
I love her, by the way. I just love Shannon.
Do you agree, Brian? I mean, she was the number one star. Of the show.
I love watching her.
We have to be honest and analytical about it. Nothing wrong with that.
I mean, to this day, I'm sorry, when people mention Beverly Hills 90210, the first thing that comes to mind is Shannon.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I love watching her act in all the show. I love how passionate she is. I just watched earlier today some of the triangle stuff and how angry she is at Kelly, at the restaurant with Rick and all this. I mean, she's like ready to. I mean, I love her.
A lot of the tensions on the set were feeding her because she, you know, she was a master thespian. I mean, she was.
She good. Told the whole story this week on her podcast about her and Jenny getting into a whole thing. Have you heard about that?
I saw a little sparks of it, but yeah, I could see that. Yeah, there was a pants game or something like that. Yeah, I mean, that was, look, you, on the set, you got to keep yourself loose too. So part of it's that, but I think
somebody asked.
The other thing is, look, and again, I think Shannon is just distinguishing herself in these last couple of years as she
totally
kind of with herself. But at the time, you know, she could be mean to people. She knew how to get into, and get at people. Mm-hmm. You know, she would, and this is again, I would hear this from Jessica. Not to mm-hmm. hide behind it, but you know, she just knew how to press everyone's buttons.
She was a button pusher.
Part of it was that she felt she had to defend herself, I guess, to the cast all the time.
It's interesting. It's a very interesting dynamic.
Anyway, that's my
somebody wanted to know.
Somebody asked, a lot of it's out already in the book.
A good person, I love her. I wanted to know, why didn't anyone sit down with Shannon and tell her there was a risk that she was going to be fired?
Okay, well, like I said, because Mr. Spelling.
Exactly.
he didn't want to get involved in his daughter's social life directly, and this is the only way I believe he could do it. Otherwise, you would have thought. I mean, there was a different incident. There was the cut the hair episode where she cut her hair and we couldn't
right.
get shots. And there were some other things that you know that she did get warned about. So that was a warning part. There was
but I don't know that. I mean, we'll have to maybe explore this with Chuck at some point. But I'm curious if someone ever sat her down and said, if you keep doing this, you're going. This is what's going.
I'm sure Paul Wagner, again, passed on, but huge influence in the show, and especially with the actors as a father confessor, told her, "You better get your shit together." There's no way he did, because Paul liked to have the set really were running smoothly. He sat there right where the actors were, and he was as close as anybody to them. There's nobody closer. I believe he would have been. And, you know, maybe she was defiant. I don't remember. Other than what I would hear. I mean, I was on the front lines at that point.
Okay. While we're in the Shannon field, of course, there's this one. Someone said, Shannon and Luke hooked up. They had to, good, because they had good chemistry.
I would say yes. I have no evidence of it, but why not? I mean,
well, you've said
they had strong libido. They both enjoyed being intimate with people. Why not? I mean,
you have the story of them, you know, going on with the kiss after the camera stopped rolling.
Absolutely.
Are you standing by that story?
But I think it happened earlier than that. I would say it probably.
Oh, definitely.
The first year or something. Yeah. I mean. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I mean, Shannon and Jason had a thing in the, what was it, the first, second year?
Yeah.
Somewhere around there, yeah.
I mean, again, these are good-looking people spending long hours together with, you know, why the hell not, you know?
But you're standing by the story that you have this tape. Are you going to
triple? Oh, the kiss thing? Well, Michael Lang has already confirmed the story, so it's a non-issue as far as I'm concerned. Eventually, when I move you know, we're going to be grandparents in July, hopefully in Cincinnati. We might be spending more time there. But, yeah, if I get my stuff, go through my storage, somewhere is there, unless I'd have to double back over anything. I thought I might have overtaped it. But, yeah,
I don't think
regardless, there's some other ones missing, too. It happened, and Michael confirmed it. He would be watching it. And it wasn't the first time. I mean, I saw that with other guys too. Okay, the guys took advantage of those situations. It was way before.
It was a different time.
Me too. We had a frisky set, and I'm not going to go down here.
Listen, staying in the Brenda world, somebody asked, "What would have happened? Say it all works out. It all worked out." They talk to Shannon. Shannon's staying for season 5. What happens? What would have happened if Brenda stayed on? It's a great question.
Well, I mean, she would have spent the summer in London and then just come back to school. We would still be playing the triangle again. At that point, I think we had the I Choose Me. So there was Brandon and Luke were out of the Kelly business, right? Is that correct? So, yeah, we just would have explored other ways, and we probably still would have brought in another character just to kind of keep up the mix. I'm not precluding the fact that we wouldn't have added Valerie.
Have a theory that Valerie is a hired scammer from Brenda. What do you think of this?
Okay, this is brings up, not that I want to hog this whole thing, but this brings up my second bombshell.
Okay.
Of a storyline.
I'm holding on.
You should hold on to it. Should I wait on this one?
No, I'm holding on tight for this for this theory. What do you have?
You want it now?
I want it now.
Okay. Jim Walsh is Valerie's father.
Oh
God.
So good. So
let's
good.
Go walk it back now. They were in Buffalo. Her father was a scumbag. Her supposed father was a bad guy. Jim and Michelle Phillips.
Totally fucked up.
Got
100%.
So after the fake father killed himself because he was a bad guy, Jim felt as a fatherly that he wanted Valerie to be close by. And at the same time, that's why he's always so annoyed with her, because she really is his flesh and blood.
Same dynamic with him and Brenda. It translates over to him and Val.
Yes.
So you're saying in season 10 or 11, you're back. Yeah,
In a Sweeps episode, Michelle Phillips would have admitted it.
This would have been a better reveal.
By the way, that's what came. That's why they almost got divorced when Cindy came back to Christmas from Hong Kong. Jim had told her the true story.
This is what really went down.
She was done with it. She was really done.
I love this. I wish.
And this would have been a better reveal than what we got with what was it? Donna and Gina being half sisters. I think this would have been a much better reveal.
No one cares.
Yeah. Well, Gina probably wouldn't even be in
this. This thing tracks beautifully. It tracks beautifully in the attitudes of the characters.
Yes. That's a really, really good one. Somebody, let's see. I think there was more. Was there any other Valerie ones? Did we have any other Valerie ones?
You know, I don't think
it's a Valerie. I don't think it's a scammer of Brenda. No.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So do you think that that's true?
No,
I don't think so. Go ahead. Brian.
I don't think I sent you this one, but I did read a comment from like a while ago on Reddit where somebody was thinking, you know, well, what would have happened if, you know, Tiffany comes on the show, but instead of being Val, she's just a recast of Brenda.
Oh, somebody did say this. This was a great question. Was there ever a thought process in just recasting Brenda?
Well, I think, you know, we would have looked at what, you know, Brenda would then have been a junior in college. And we kind of really would have looked what kind of journey she'd have through college that year. And, you know, I mean, we could have brought back Stuart, God bless David Gale.
Yes.
You know, we had some other things. We wouldn't be hitting the Dylan thing right away, but that would always be in the background. And she would be a student there. And she'd also be in the, she probably would actually, you know, we'd play a little bit with the showbiz stuff. She might, you know, end up in a pilot season thing, and we might have to push that a bit because we're not going to give up on her acting thing. She just all of a sudden been to London. So, you know, maybe she's in a local production. Maybe she falls in love with a good looking actor there who has some other kind of addiction problems that she gets addicted. I don't know. I mean, there's just, it would be great to have it, because whatever she did, she was wonderful.
All right. Let's see. Some people are saying some things. Johnny Meyer says the whole cast came under so much press scrutiny over the years, and the press wanted anything. People who literally get their toes stepped on, and it was news. It got insane and stupid.
Yeah, tremendous pressure.
Amy, our friend, says, I've heard so many times, Larry, that Shannon was amazing with her lines, and I couldn't agree more. She was truly rock and roll, mastering all facets of the show on and off. Okay. Catherine West says Shannon is amazing, but there's no way that you accidentally piss off everyone. Through no fault of your own. She is tremendous, but it is what it is, and the show did go on. I don't have a
What I want to say to Catherine is, I heard this, I think, story from Jessica also. Again, Shannon grew up on sets. So unlike everybody else, she really, her whole life, she was playing somebody else. And
it's interesting.
I remember Jessica saying to me something like, Shannon, if you talk to Shannon, whoever she talks to, she tells a different story of where she was born. It's like, it kind of made sense, because it's a pure actor. She doesn't really have the thing she has the most grip on is the character she's playing.
Yes.
And so because of that, I think she just probably was frustrated in social situations and was became a mean girl. I mean, and knew how to get under people's skin. She knew that Tori was the boss's door, so she would lay that into her.
She'd lay that button in.
I have to say that. That would happen. Mm-hmm. This came from Jessica, and I can't say I heard it myself firsthand, but that I could see that. And just everything. That's how she defended herself. I think she always felt that she was had to defend herself. But whatever she did, it worked. She's just so amazing. She's even what she's doing now is amazing, I think.
Sadie says Shannon is amazing. She was good on the show. I still wonder what would have happened if she stayed. She was incredible. Thank you, Sadie.
I think we would have had a new fashion. We would have kept
this up. This was in regards to your theory about Jim Walsh. Holy shit. Love it.
You know, when you think about Jim, you can see it. Look.
All right. I want to play something here. Because
this is Michelle Phillips.
There was a great question that Chris had asked. If Jason's movie career took off, would the show have still gone on? What would they have done? So this is pre-Larry moment.
What movie would have been was at stake here? What was his career?
Calendar Girl?
Calendar Girl, which I think was written and directed by Penny Marshall, I feel like. So no, really? I feel like that's the one that we're talking about.
Okay.
This is what Chuck had to say in regards to that. Chuck was not available today to podcast. Our love is with Chuck today. But he will be back next week. I'm excited to say that next week we have Ken Stringer finally coming onto this podcast. He did not want to cover a season 4 and 5. He wants to go to a season 3. She came in through the bathroom window. So Chuck and Chuck and I'm trying to track down the actress, which is.
I think Burt Reynolds is in there.
He is.
Yeah.
Doing more complicated. But I'm excited because Ken Stringer did a lot of season 8 things and. I'm just excited.
He's a good guy. Please send him my regards. We'll do.
That's next week. We're not going anywhere. Here's what Chuck had to say in regards to what they would have done if Jason's Calendar Girl had taken off. Okay, Chuck, you are not available for the podcast tonight, but you're giving us a couple of minutes here to answer one of the fan questions that came up. The question was from Chris, and he wanted to know if Jason Priestley's acting career had taken off, how would that affect it 90210? What would you guys have done? Would there have been a different lead? That was a follow-up question he had asked.
Well, it's interesting. Mr. Spelling, Spelling Entertainment was a television company, not a movie company. And although Aaron made some fun movies and different movies, both major ones for HBO and then some fun feature films as well. He realized, as we all did who were in TV in those years, that we were in the second tier. So I do know, I have from my own personal experience, that in 1978, the Spelling Company was asked to allow Kate Jackson, one of the three actresses of Charlie's Angels, to come to the start of season 2, like 3 to 4 days late, I think it was, so she could complete her filming that was on the schedule for her to do, although she had not been cast yet on a major motion picture. The picture was Kramer versus Kramer. It was the Meryl Streep part. Oh my God. And the reason I know this is he said no to Kate. So the project that he gave her to her to say, here's a really good script and ABC will do it as ABC Theater as a platform for you if you want it. I'm not even sure she read it. Of course, it was my calling card script, The Fierce Dreams of Jackie Watson, which he paid me X number of dollars for a 2-week hold, which was 10 times more than I would make a week working for Women's Wear and the California Apparel News.
Right.
You know, he was willing to do that. So I remembered that anecdote when having heard this question. And first of all, know this to be the case, is Aaron had different relationships with women than men. And sometimes that worked to the man's advantage, and sometimes that worked to the woman's advantage. But he, so where he was, no, you can't do this, Kate. You know, he made allowances for Luke to do Buffy. And I'm not sure, I can't remember, it did Luke, was he making that while we were making our, you know, in double ups or things like that? Did we let him go? I can't remember that. But the one thing I do know is that we had our schedule, and these were our stars, and they would be expected, the movies would have to either wait till they're completely free or be in second position and shoot around them. There are many, many stories of people who are in a working television show that, you know, shot the TV show in the day and then ran and did the feature, you know, all through the night and, you know, ran their health down. But at the same time, they got it done. So I'm thinking something like that would have been in more order. I know that Mr. Spelling was very critical of Luke's movie choices. And I know that we all expected Jason's movie, directed by Penny Marshall, to do much better than it did.
Right.
That's a kind of a forgotten movie. Where his other movie, the feature that he did at the time when he was still working as an actor, was the story of Tombstone. And he was in one of those, you know, there were two Tombstone movies made at the same time. He was in one of them, and he was great in it. Played Doc Holliday, I think.
Yeah.
Fabulous. So Spelling would have made accommodations because he was a good old boy. And that's right. What it would have been. But would have preserved our right in first position. And it would be really bad, management not to.
So you're suggesting something like what Michael J. Fox did in making Back to the Future, where he went and did Family Ties at one time at some point, and then would leave that show and then go do Back to the Future or this other movie that was happening at the time.
Right, and Spelling would have let him do it because Spelling liked him.
Yeah,
Spelling back with Charlie's Angels. I'll say in his defense, there were three angels, and the first angel walked out after the first season, Farrah.
Right.
She was the most important one. So here's the next one, Kate, who was really number two, although Jackie Smith was one of the most beautiful in terms of storylines and things. She was the had least amount to do in that series. So, you know, he was scared that he may lose his next one and what would happen.
Sure.
And the difference was, of course, is that Charlie's Angels was at the beginning of his ABC rise in the 70s, or at least toward the beginning, where this was, you know, he was much more established in the 90s and kind of knew what would be.
Right. So that's the answer. He would have worked with Jason.
There you go.
There's the answer to that question. Okay. Good stuff out of Chuck there. Good to talk to him. Okay. Here's one.
I think I one thing just to add to that. Basically, the actors, once we had a hiatus, they all had things booked, whether it was movies of the week or movies. And Luke didn't lose any time doing his movies. You know, like Chuck said, they were in second position with wherever.
And they also were contracted to 90210 for five seasons.
Yeah.
Which we, Chuck and I did get into that.
But there was a land rush to take other work once we were down for a short period.
Chuck also did say that Jason would have been counting down the days until that contract was up. Here's one. Dylan, or I don't know if they mean Luke, but Dylan.
I'm assuming they mean Luke.
And Carol Potter had a thing.
Oh, wait a second. I thought they meant Dylan and Cindy Walsh. I think, no. Luke Perry.
Let's go Luke and Carol Potter had a thing.
Mm-hmm. No.
Now, wait a minute. Now, Carol Potter has said on this podcast a long time ago that she was into Luke.
Every woman likes Luke, but I just don't see it. I don't see it.
Me and Luke kind of thing.
Yeah. No, I don't see that. Sorry. Now, there's other ones I could see, but not that.
What do you think, Brian? Do you want to weigh in?
I don't think so. I know Carol says it on the podcast. She also says it on one of the bonus features for the DVD set. She talks about it too. But not, no, I think maybe some harmless flirtation here and there, but a thing, I don't think so.
Well, listen, I mean, didn't Greg Brady like try to hook up with Mrs. Brady, Carol Brady? The TV show from the Brady Bunch? I mean, I think that was the thing. It's not out of the realm of possibility.
First of all, Greg and Marsha?
Greg Brady tried to hook up with only Marsha Brady, but I feel like he tried to hook up with Carol Brady. I forget Greg Brady.
Who's the actress? Was Shirley Jones or who's that?
Greg Brady is
Barry Williams.
Barry Williams, and this is a classic.
Marion McCormick.
No, Maureen McCormick, yes, but the mother.
What's the mom's name? What was the mom's name?
Florence Henderson.
Yeah.
At first I was confused because I thought you were talking about Robert Reed, and then I was like, Robert Reed,
my brother's fiance, Karen Richmond, also is part of that Brady clan. She does the movies, too. She was a Gidget for me in the late 80s.
That's interesting.
Karen Richmond. No, but I can see him. Look, the sexiest of the moms at that time. Certainly,
I have to go with Stephanie.
I have to say Catherine Cannon. You know, she was the most alluring. So I can
I
see.
Have to go with Stephanie.
I was going to like all of a sudden speculate anything.
Oh, you're saying of the parents that Catherine Cannon is the
actresses,
most...
the actresses who played them who came down to work every day.
Okay, and Brian, you said Stephanie Beecham.
I'm firm with Stephanie. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say you know I didn't really see her work that much, but yeah, I wouldn't say her myself, but yeah. Only because I saw the other ones more.
I'm going Cindy Walsh.
Well, Cindy Walsh is different.
I think Dylan is gorgeous too.
Dylan and Cindy Walsh, I can see. Let's go back now to the characters. Dylan and Cindy Walsh, I could see more than Luke Perry and Carol Potter.
Tammy says that. What's his name? Barry Williams. Barry Williams and Florence Henderson went on a date.
Great.
Oh, okay. Ann Gillespie. Anybody for Ann in that?
Ann was an attractive woman too. Because again, I was the same age as them or older. Probably. I'm just trying to think that probably a little bit older. But no, like I said, I'm sticking with Catherine Cannon.
All right, let's read some of the Reddit things that are coming up. Brenda's jealousy over Brandon's girlfriends comes to light when she finds out she's adopted and sparks fly.
You know, I mean, we did a little bit with the Stevie adoption street, but, you know, look, that's pretty cool. I mean, yeah, again, you know, year 15, that comes out at the Thanksgiving reunion at Tahoe when the family's there that she's adopted.
This could have been an amazing sweeps week because you could have had the Valerie thing coming out at the same time as Brenda's not my daughter, you know?
Again. Yeah. Exactly.
Let's see.
So they're really half sisters.
Yes.
Not even half. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, look, do they really look alike? No.
No.
Brendan and Brandon, yeah. You know, I mean, they're both human beings, but, you know.
Right.
Same weight, but, you know.
Here we have this whole.
It's a good one. Who is that from?
I don't. I deleted it. I forgot the person's name.
Good job.
Yeah. All right. Here is another wild one.
This is from Independent Ad 7204. My theory on Kelly's sister Joy. For people that don't remember, Joy was Kelly's secret half sister that shows up in season 7. He says, I developed this theory the other day that Joy isn't Kelly's sister at all, but is Bill Taylor's much younger mistress. The reason why Bill lied to Kelly like that is so that she wouldn't get on his case about having a lover so many years younger than himself.
I mean, I don't hate
that. I would have you on staff. I would have that person on staff. That's a good story.
I like it. I really like that.
I don't hate that theory.
What?
I don't hate that theory. That's
that's a usable theory. We would go down there. Who wrote that?
This is Independent Ad
7204.
Good.
What does that mean?
Independent Ad. Again, we'd have to look at that. I mean, Yeah, I mean, we should tell our friend who played Joy. I'm trying to remember her name.
Ruth Livier. Ruth.
What? Ruth Livier, who I actually have a shout out to in my new novel, actually.
Yeah, she's wonderful.
A little bit of a Mexican plot in there, and a guy who kind of connects, he learns English by watching 90210, and he really is attracted to Ruth Livier playing Joy Taylor.
Ruth is so attractive in 90210. I mean, yeah. And she still is today.
She's good. So I could see Bill. I mean, look, God bless John C. Reilly, another great one in Hollywood pro for so many years, playing that, you know, the leading man, the stock leading man. He's fabulous. Right. And yeah, you could see him having a mistress like that and her like kind of like fooling Kelly.
Wanting to know more.
Heartwarming stuff. Yeah.
Wanting to know more about the daughter, you know, manipulating a scenario to hang out with Kelly Taylor. Totally can get that behind that one. Brian, you had a really good one. This is going to drop some bombs here.
Oh,
please. Okay. I write. It's not comedy.
Please
bring up the possibility that Dan Rubin is the real father of Andrea's baby. Is there a reality?
Believe it.
I mean, we're all on the same street here. I mean, again, in our subconnect, in our subconvections, or memes, or our tropes. I mean, trope. Yeah, I mean, sure. Why not? I mean, I'm sure we at one point might have even thought that we probably had that conversation at one point.
I mean, Hannah looked nothing like Jesse.
The second one would have looked like Jesse. If they had a second one.
If they had stayed around.
Yeah, I mean, why not? I mean, you know, we never really stressed the birth control angle when they slept together. How many times did they sleep together? We know once. We know twice she woke up with him. They probably slept together maybe five times at the most.
I mean, are we saying that Andrea Zuckerman waits to have sex with Dan Rubin and then on the first go-around gets pregnant?
Like it's possible.
First round out the gate is pregnant with the, you know.
Dan. Let's just go back to Dan a second. Dan being like a conscientious TA and also a little bit of an ass man, probably has condoms in his wallet. And like he is
right.
Not
totally.
He's not. It's not his first or second rodeo, which is
a small amount
of rodeos to have. But yeah. It's not.
He's been around students before.
But anyway, he would have protection. Now. Something might have happened, you know. I believe Andrea is hot in bed. For all those people who think I don't like her,
100%
in bed.
I agree with you, Larry. And Kat,
a second time, and he wasn't protected, and maybe that's why he got so scared away from her. So, yeah, I could believe this theory. I could work with this. Absolutely, I could make this work.
Brian, you're saying that you agree with Larry about Andrea being hot in bed.
Andrea and Claire are the biggest freaks in bed. I'm sorry, 100%.
I agree.
All right, let's see what we have here. Jay, heartbroken over Andrea, decides to declare his love for Andrea on stage at the Republican. This is Mary Pickford at the Republican National Convention and gets himself kicked out. This embarrassing moment is watched by millions of viewers, and Bush loses the election that year. I think Chuck would have loved this one.
He would have loved it.
Yeah.
Steve wasn't adopted. Samantha made up the adoption story to get publicity for her upcoming show.
So, in other words, he really was Samantha and Rush's son.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Biologically Samantha's son.
Yeah, you know. It depending on how things went, that would have been possible. Yeah, I mean, look, as it is now, we have, you know, Steve finds his biological mother, and we don't know who his father is, and it turns out to be Rush. You know,
that was one of the most brilliant things that you came up with, Larry. Because
luckily, it tracked. You know, all the things were there for it. The footprints were there for it. You just had to follow them.
The thing was with that was that Rush was perfectly casted as Steve Sanders'
father. Dead and Ian, they look so. They definitely look related.
Yeah, we've lost so many great people. Jed Allen was just such a master. Loved being around him. He was a lot of fun, but just a great pro. Another, you know, just guys have just made their career over 50 years doing this, you know.
Okay, let's see what we have here. Now, Larry's not going to be able to participate in this, but are Ariel Hunter and Noah Hunter related? Hear me out. And I didn't read the whole thing, but Noah Hunter is a later season person. I reached out to Ken Stringer and asked him about this, and he said we would have to ask Michael Braverman because that's who created Noah Hunter. And Michael Braverman, as we learned, watching the season 8 episode needed some work. We watched
Michael Braverman with the Larry Mullen replacement. He was the guy who was going to save the show because I ruined it.
Let me just say, when I watched the first episode of season 8, he did not save the show at all.
They broke the code. Threw it away. They ignored what was powerful.
And Brandon meets up with Susan in D.C. They fall in love and get married. No kids ever.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know, but the
Susan thing was always there. Emma did a great job as the character, and it was very memorable because she's like the one that really put Brandon under. I mean, he doesn't usually get best like that. He got dumped hard.
That was fantastic. And
he got hard in public, man. She took the job. So definitely, if I was there in season 8, we would have at least heard about her. You know, he'd run into her for an episode of Sweeps.
I would love that. Tammy,
he kind of would dump her because he's just petty.
Tammy comes back to say, back to Barry Williams and Florence Henderson, Barry Windham's took it seriously and she did not. Florence recognized it as a crush. Okay. Aaron Stevens says, hey, that's me. I don't know which person he's talking about. Liz says, right, Hannah looked nothing like Jesse. The Jesse timeline and birth do not work out. It's Dan's baby.
Yeah, it could have been. It was all laying there for us. You know, we never even considered it. I have to think now. I don't think we did. Because we were really worried about, making it right for Gabrielle, the actress, and also making it right for the character. Because, again, she was the brightest girl in high school. Now she's like really in her college career is not going well.
She's not doing anything.
She's not in the paper. She's just not productive.
Have a live breaking theory from See the Wave. Nat was really an adult film star from the 70s.
I like it.
And the condom he used with Joan at the end of season 6 was from that era.
I think that's totally possible. We did that, of course, in the Fade In, Fade Out, the Roger Corman retrospective at the Pitch at the Dark where they discover Nat is in one of the films. And that's actually where he meets his bride, the woman.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, doing Corman pictures is not much of a leap to say he could have been doing porn.
Absolutely. He would have been cast because he had done porn. Corman would have cast because that was the casting, bunch he was looking for. He wanted some sexy people.
All right, let's see what else we have.
What was it, Roller Girls, that movie that...
I love that movie. Yeah. There's a bunch more here, guys. Let's look at this one. Here's this. If you watch season 5 very closely, there are some hints to suggest that Chancellor Arnold had a romantic relationship with Cindy Walsh, but it would have been like decades ago, maybe at a university they both attended or he taught at, and she attended. The reason Jim and Cindy moved to Hong Kong is largely due to the fact that Jim doesn't want Cindy around Milton Arnold. What is Milton Arnold?
Milton.
His name is Arnold Arnold.
Arnold, yeah. Arnold. Lest
Arnold,
they
Arnold, Arnold Square. Arnold
their romance. Movies 20 TV 2023. I don't know why I'm struggling.
Yeah, I mean, this is the trains we are on. I don't particularly, would probably not do this, but yeah, all that thinking is really good. I think if we did that, we wound up doing something like that with Chancellor Arnold and Samantha Sanders, and we used that actually to put pressure on the relationship. So we actually do better than that suggestion because it has vertical impact on Claire and Steve's relationship, which becomes tenuous because of the interference of Samantha dumping her father, basically. That kind of sets everything on edge and leads to the breakup.
I want to say I think Chuck would have really loved doing this episode. He would have had a field day with some of this shit. Watching the first few episodes, this is from Said 76. Watching the first few episodes where Valerie was introduced, and I've been wondering, what if instead of bringing her in... Oh, this is what you said.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
so recasting, about recasting Brenda.
Right.
All right. Okay, this is very long. Brian, do you want me to read this, or is it okay if, or you want to read it? What do you want to do?
Sure. Let's speed through this one. So this, by the way, this was one of our most controversial posts on Reddit. We had to actually lock the comments because people were just
crazy. I see a little fucking lock button there. Holy shit. Yeah. What happened?
This is by Kellex Riri. Kelly and Dylan are my favorite couple. Okay. I've seen a lot of people on here who hate this couple, and I really don't understand why. They're the reason I'm watching the show. They have the best chemistry out of anyone, and I don't think it's fair to diminish their relationship purely to lust. It is very clear how much Dylan wanted her and loved her. If he didn't, he wouldn't have actively pursued her and dedicated a book to her.
Wow.
Whenever he was with someone else, he wanted Kelly back. Like he said, his problem started when he lost her. And yes, we all know the behind the scenes drama and how some things got rewritten, but it's not like Dylan and Kelly are the only ones that underwent this. This show is known for outrageous storylines, and personally, them being soulmates makes sense. I think Twin Flames is more their case, but I don't think the writers back then knew about that concept, so they went with soulmates. They had a very deep connection. Dylan never looked at anyone like he looked at her, and their relationship was one of the most long-standing ones. They grew and evolved, whereas Brenda and Dylan died in high school. I mean, it's ironic that Brenda said she'd be just another girl he knew in high school, and he denied it, only to then say it in season 5 exactly, then followed by, "I miss Kelly."
This is a big audience here,
Larry. I respect everything he said. I just don't agree. That's all.
Do you have the response, Pete? There was a good response. Hold on.
What is a twin flame? Can we be told in this generation, for people that are not of this generation, what is a twin flame?
No, it's this whole convoluted concept of like pretty much a soulmate, but. You know, let's not even get into it. It's pretty much a soulmate.
I need to know.
Oh, but I just really need to know what a twin flame is. So maybe
is that what you say? She's my twin flame, or how would you use it?
She's my twin flame. Like, you guys have like the exact same personality and desires. Pretty much.
Something. But how would you use
it? How is it different than a soulmate? How is it different than a soulmate? And I like Larry's question even better. How would you use it in a sentence?
Well, only because I'm a young adult novelist. You know, I need to know these things. Use it in a sentence, please, Brian.
It's someone that's, you know, just like you. You know, it's your exact your other half.
She's my twin flame. Well, how would you say
it? So is someone's wife a twin flame?
Yeah. Potentially, they would say, yeah, that's my twin flame, or so-and-so is my twin flame.
But how is that different than a soulmate?
Well,
I don't know.
Okay.
It's more, I can see the difference. I like twin flame. Anyway, no, look, people will always argue this thing. I have a different opinion, that's all.
I don't agree with your Brandon. I don't agree with your Brandon and Kelly theory. I don't think they're the royal couple, Brandon and Kelly. I can't get behind it anymore. The more I see Kelly involved with Brandon, she just
watching that season 8 episode
brings
it was,
the whole room down.
I don't know. Really. I've never seen anything after 7.
I mean, she literally got caught up in a cult when she was dating this kid.
She was in a fire before that. Again,
fair enough.
He totally betrayed her. No. I believe that they're the ones that were the best for each other. I believe that. It's just my opinion.
We're going to move on from the response to the Dylan and Kelly thing.
Because my theory, before we say that, I just want to say, Dylan and Kelly grew up exactly alike. They're children of divorce. And so they go at each other. That's all they know. And
if you watch
the scenes between them, children of divorce, and it's hard to watch.
I have always been a Dylan and Kelly for the most part. But I have to say to you that when I did a poll on Instagram when I first took over and we put who belongs together, the result of people that feel that Brenda and Dylan belong together is wild. It's like 75% thinks that is the couple, Brenda and Dylan. Yeah. So those first few seasons of Dylan and Brenda really made an impact. It was very impactful to the audience of 902.
Well, also Kelly broke them up. So, I mean, she's, you know.
She will always be the villain in that. And I understand it more now. All right, here's one that's going to annoy me. The downfall of Claire. Why did Claire's character turn so annoying? She came in all fun and left pissed off about everything all the time. I was actually glad when she left the show. What happened?
Okay.
I want to see the responses.
Well, there is a response.
You know, I think there's some truth in that, and we have to bear responsibility for it. And you know, sometimes you just kind of go with what's what we're getting from the act. You kind of with the actors, you kind of floating. You know, you're hearing their voice in your head because you're basically when you're writing them, you're playing all the parts, and you want to get it right. And I think we heard that voice in her, I guess, and maybe it's because she was disdainfully is so much smarter than everybody else. It's frustrating for her, which is part of it. And she's bored because she's, you know, so talented. She, you know, she has that curse of being overly smart, and
she's bored by people like Steve. Kind of,
but again, if you're going with Steve Sanders, you're going to be annoyed a lot. You're going to get annoyed a lot. So that was part of it too. You know, unfortunately, was she that annoying when she was with David? No.
I just feel like
I think Steve to get, you know, that was their relationship. So I just think, and that's probably why it ended, because both, you know, the actors, you know, were not fond of each other by the end. That's not a secret, I don't think. And maybe that's what happened. You know, maybe it just picks up the characters, and it just becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
I'll read the response. I just want to weigh in and say that Claire is a very cool character. You guys wrote something very beautiful for Kathleen. Like she's very cool. She's very smart, as you said, but she's very funny, and she fits in with the people that she fits in with. And there's just like this beauty inside of her, as you referenced earlier, Brian. So she's super sexy and super fun. And I don't understand when people say that about Claire. I get kind of annoyed by it because I feel like the Steve character, like Larry said, is just so difficult to deal with. It's not like he just does one thing every once in a while to fuck up. He fucks up all the time, and it's like obvious things that he shouldn't be doing, you know?
Yeah, so, what I would say is people really need to put themselves in Claire's shoes and really imagine what that situation would be like for them. I don't think they'd be, you know, like I said, they'd be feeling the exact same way.
It's actually perfect. She's bored by Beverly Hills in some ways. She wants to go do amazing things, and I feel like that's what that is. Now, here's the response.
Everyone's holding it back.
Her attitude was a downer for sure, but my girl was usually right. It gets frustrating to be the intelligent one in a group of full of people acting on silly impulses all the time. She clearly learned from Brandon's admonitions. What is he saying? After the prom night shenanigans, and showed up differently when they made her character a series regular. Had they only listened to her regarding Tara and Ray, I loved her bitchiness, but I really couldn't stand when they tried to make her sad and weepy. She didn't do victim well. I agree.
I think this person nailed it. I
deleted the person's name. But very good. Let's join the fan. If you want to join my Claire fan club, you're welcome to be a part of it. Okay. What is this one? Oh God, more Kelly.
Sorry, I have a little dog stuff to do here. We have more. Oh geez, okay. Oh,
well, this is a response to a gym post.
This won't be a popular opinion, but if I was, where does the Jim Walsh comment? Anyone else think Jim Walsh was a dick? Been doing a rewatch of season 2 now, and I just find Daddy Walsh to be a little too black and white regards of Brenda as an idiot and favors Brandon way too much. Yeah. And is the general
Can you give the
dog? Knob? Yeah. I suppose do you think, let's wrap this show up here. Larry, do you think that Jim Walsh could be a little bit of a dick, Larry? Do you think Jim Walsh could be a little bit of a dick?
Well, parents are a bit of a dick. I mean, not your friend. They're trying to guide you, and, you know, and they have their own hangups and stuff. So I think he represented of his generation, you know, that figure. But, you know, he clearly favored Brandon over Brenda. But, you know, that's was an old school way. You kind of more protective of the female. You know, it's an old thinking. And for whatever reason, that's part of, you know, Jim's Midwestern upbringer.
Yes. All right.
He could be a dick, but, you know.
Any other things, Brian, that you want to bring up?
I guess not. I mean, we're running out of time. But yes. There's so much more we could have.
So we'll have to do a number two of this.
I think it's I think people had really some good theories. I like. I mean, that's pretty much how we had to do this and thinking and stuff. And when you really want to think out of the box, and also the things you've laid, the little clues over the years you've laid, and the characters that are just sitting there waiting to bring back, or the moments that can echo back and be important. And that's what the show did so well. It really treated its fans, the long-term fans, well, because we always took them in mind. You know, they'd get a kick out of this, or they'd know this. And
yes.
You know, it pushed us onward because they knew the show better than us for the most part. We even knew that then without social media.
All right, this has been great, guys. We will do a version two of this. Chuck and I will be with Ken Stringer next week looking at she comes in through the bathroom window. I probably said that wrong. And that's it. We will see everybody next week.
Excellent. Bye-bye, Brian. Everyone, keep trying. We'll see y'all. Thanks for taking part.